Thank you. Okay, so I am very excited because I think Anna was finally able to go on the call. Anna, can you try and say something or just say hello so we can hear you?
Can you hear me well?
Yes, we can. Okay, so welcome.
Okay, wonderful.
I'm very, very excited to have Anna Steinberger with us today. So we're not going to be able to do it on a video call because technology is just too much for all of us. So we're just going to do it the old-fashioned way. So Anna is with us today, and she is a Holocaust survivor, and she lived in Houston for many, many years now. She's at the moment at the Brookdale Galleria. So when you're passing by that, make sure to wave and smile. And I think we can just go ahead and start. So if you can just share with us a little bit about your childhood and how was life like before the Holocaust. And I'm also just gonna let you know that at the moment we have 140 people that have joined us and listening to you.
And I hope everybody is going to stay well. Yes, first of all, thank you for inviting me to do this. I'm sorry you cannot see me. I even combed my hair for this occasion, but at least you can hear me. So I was about 11 years old. I lived in Poland, a place called Radom, just south of Warsaw. And my father was a tailor, my mom was a homemaker. I had one brother, he was 5 years older. And we were not a very religious family. My father always used to say, "I'm as close to God in my own living room as I am in the synagogue." So we observed high holidays and general Jewish traditions, but did not really keep a very strict kosher house. And we were a close-knit family with some cousins and aunts in the city of Radom, and spent many holidays and vacations together. So it was a good childhood. Everything was good until an unexpected event happened in 1939. My main hobbies were basically I used to act. My friends and I, we used to put on little shows for our families, for our friends, and that was fun. And I finished sixth grade when I was getting ready to start my seventh grade. I couldn't wait, my friends, to go back to school. I miss seeing them during summer vacations. And when I woke up in the morning, can you hear me? Hello? Yeah, you can hear me. Yeah, okay. Well, when I woke up in the morning, there was a lot of commotion. There were airplanes flying, there were bombs falling, there was a raging fire in the building. We lived on the ground floor. There was a raging fire on the roof. And when I asked my mom, "What's going on? Am I not going to school today?" She says, "No, honey, you and your brother go hide in the cellar and we'll join you there in a minute." It was
Anna?
September 1, 1939, Germany invaded Poland. It just goes to show you, like with this COVID-19 epidemic now, pandemic, very unexpected things happen in life. Instead of going to school, we were hiding in the basement, just hoping and praying that somehow we'll survive. And thank God, looks like our prayers were answered.
And so
So,
you were 11 years old at that day, is that correct?
that is correct. My brother was 5 years older, so he was 16. And we were hiding. We were basically living in the cellar, dark cellar, where we kept our firewood, our potatoes, and some other supplies. And when things kind of quieted down, we would go back to our apartment, only to run back to the cellar maybe an hour later, because those air raids with bombing repeated themselves several times every single day. Until about the third day of the war, when my uncle came and told us that we need to leave, we need to get away from the advancing German armies. So that was just the third or fourth day of the war. I don't remember exactly.
Okay, thank you. So do you want to keep on and sharing with us the story of the war? Where did you went to? Who came with you?
Okay. Be happy to do that. Well, in the middle of the night, my uncle, who was a country doctor, came with two horses and a buggy and says, there is no time to pack. Just get dressed. You know, September was already pretty cold in Poland. And we're going. And when we said, well, we're going, where are we going? Danger comes from the west. We just went the opposite direction. We were going east. We did not know anyone in eastern Poland, but that was the natural reaction. And the worst thing of all was that as we were trying to move eastward with thousands of other people, both Jewish and Christian, that tried to get away from the advancing German front line, the German airplanes would lower themselves as low as the ceiling and machine gun the people that tried to save themselves. So my father was injured in his right arm, but my uncle, being a physician, always traveling with his doctor's bag, was able to stop the bleeding and basically saved his right arm. Thank God for that, because his tailoring skills during the war is what helped us actually survive during the war. I knew my uncle and aunt very well. I knew those two horses and a buggy because I used to visit my uncle in the summer. They had one son, my brother's age, but they didn't have any daughters. So I was the little princess when I was visiting them. And my uncle used to take me to see his patients. And I always asked my uncle, I said, why do people get sick? Why can't we just get rid of all the diseases? And I think my passion for biomedical research started when I was just a very young child. I was going to cure the world of all the diseases. I tried hard. I made a little contribution. But unfortunately, there are still many, many diseases that we have to fight for. Right now, it's the COVID-19 that is threatening our lives. So,
well, Anna, maybe that's a good timing to share that you are a doctor, you're a virologist, and that you helped create some of the flu vaccines. So Anna knows a lot about the situation that we're at now.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes I feel I wish I could go back to the laboratory, do some more research, but I think I'm a little bit too old for that now. Anyway, after being on the road for about 3 or 4 days, again, I don't remember exactly, we ended up in eastern Poland and knocked on different farmers' doors. Some people offered us some food, but they couldn't really accommodate us. So luckily, one time my uncle knocked on a door of one of the houses and nobody answered, but the door was not locked. We just kind of moved in and the owners never came back. Maybe they were fleeing further east, or maybe they were already killed during the war. So we already had a roof over our heads, but German armies were advancing very rapidly through Polish territory, and we knew that sooner or later they'll catch up with us. But as by a miracle, and I believe in miracles to this day, and my father said one morning, "I hear Russians spoken here. What in the world are the Russians doing here?" We did not know that Stalin and Hitler made an agreement to divide Poland. And luckily, we happened to end up under the Russian regime. And life during the war was very, very difficult, very hard. I can tell you a little more about it. But I will forever be grateful to the Russians because they basically saved my parents, my brother, and my life during the war. Otherwise, I probably would not be here. My fate, being Jewish, would have been the same as 6 million other innocent Jewish people that perished during the Holocaust. Yeah. So here I am.
I just want to explain, because we have a lot of kids and teens that joined us today, and I'm very, very grateful and happy for that. Just want to explain a little bit about World War II, because, you know, nowadays when you talk about war, it sounds so different than what it was. So the situation was that Hitler, which was the prime minister, the chancellor of Germany, was invaded Poland, where Anna and her family used to live. And now we know that the Nazis and the people who control Germany at those time were very anti-Semitic and against the Jews. So all the Jewish people who had the option tried to go east towards Russia. But they didn't know that during the war, the beginning of the war, Stalin, which was kind of like the prime minister of Russia, and Hitler decided to divide Poland in half. So while Anna and her family were going east, they knew that they are still in the area of Poland, but they were actually in the new Russian territories, and that's what saved them, because you can say a lot of bad things about Stalin, but at least they didn't persecute the Jews as much as Germany in Poland at that time.
Sharing
with us a little bit about how you survived. I saw a lot of questions, and some of them I'm going to ask in the end, but some of the questions were about food and how were you able to get food during the journey?
Well, that was the most difficult thing during the war. Life in Russia was very, 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 very difficult. We lived in a one-room family house, first on a collective farm for about a year, where my father and my brother worked in the fields. And I, after finishing sixth grade, I was helping the teacher take care of some kids in a kindergarten, because the collective farm only had two grades, kindergarten, first and second grade. But that was okay, because I had to learn Russian in order to continue my education. But after about a year, we moved to Stalingrad, where we again lived in a one-room apartment, but it already had electricity, and we didn't have to run down to the outhouse in the middle of the night, whether it was snowing or raining or what. We had a shared bathroom down the hall. But the worst thing of all, if I told you that I was hungry, not for a day, not for a week, not for a month, but for 6 years, from 39 until about the beginning of the 1946, I was always hungry. I was supposed to study for my school. I was supposed to get ready for my exams. And all I could think of is, where can I get some food? So by babysitting and by my father fixing some piece of clothing for one of the NKVD leaders, they never had a shortage of food. They would give us some eggs or a loaf of bread, and that's how we were able to survive. So when I babysat for people or walked their dogs, the local people, Russian people, they would also give me some food. I never got any money. It was just food. It was always food. So now we are socially isolated, but at least we can get plenty of food, and we have television and we have telephones, so we can at least keep in touch via all this technology. So when I think of things that happen unexpectedly, we just never know what life has in store for us. We just have to be prepared and fight it as well as we can. Yeah.
Anna, so you were in Russia with your entire family, right?
I was what? I'm sorry?
You were in Russia with your family, is that correct? The entire family went with you to Russia?
Well, we lived in Russia. First, we lived on a collective farm, as I mentioned. Then I lived in Stalingrad until Germany invaded the Soviet Union in June of 1941. And we had to flee again further east, and we ended up in Kazakhstan, in Alma-Ata. It was the capital of Kazakhstan in those days. It's not the capital anymore. And now I could speak Russian. I was doing well in school, but food was always an issue. And the other good thing that happened in Russia is we could hardly afford a loaf of bread, but we could go to the opera for practically nothing. The best opera, the best ballet. I saw everything in Alma-Ata many times over, because a lot of the actors also fled and ended up in Alma-Ata. And a loaf of bread on a black market maybe was 100 rubles, but a ticket to an opera was only 2 rubles. So I could afford the theater while we could not afford the food, just what we could gain and barter. We did have coupons for food, but I used to line up in the middle of the night when the word got around that some store had flour or sugar or some other food item. And when the store opened up, the message was, there is no sugar, there is no flour, we don't have anything. Because everything went through the back door for bribes, and it was very difficult to live on paper coupons, because you couldn't even get the food for which you had the coupons for. So food was always an issue. Another bad thing that happened during the war was before we left Stalingrad, my brother was drafted to the Russian army. And not until 1946 that we received a message through the International Red Cross that my brother is looking for his family. My maiden name was Schneider. He was looking for the Schneider family. And we found out in 1946. So for about 5 years, we had no idea whether he was dead or alive, until we found out that he too survived. He was injured during the war, but did survive the war and was back in Warsaw. And so that was the other good news. And of course, after the war, for the first time, the Russian authorities gave us actually a choice. They told us you could stay in the Soviet Union as Russian citizens, or you can go back to your hometown. Well, of course, we wanted to go back to our hometown, because during the war on Russian radio, of course, we had only a small radio, all we could hear is how brave the Russian soldiers are, how they are winning the war, how they are pushing the German armies back, and so on and so forth. We had no idea, not even a clue, what the Germans did to Jewish people and the gypsies and other innocent victims in the areas that they occupied, particularly, you know, the concentration camps in Poland, the Treblinka and Auschwitz, and we had no idea of any of that. So we wanted to go back to Poland to see if any of our family members have survived. Unfortunately, when we got back to Poland, the news was not very good. None of my relatives survived, except for one sister, my mom's sister, who actually lived in Paris, France, and she with her husband and their son were able to escape the German occupation of France and ended up in New York. So we knew that at least her one sister was still alive. We did not want to stay in Poland because we considered it to be a large cemetery. But it was very difficult to also get out of Poland. We didn't have much money. We did not know how to go and where to go. But there were Jewish organizations that were helping Jewish people to get out of Poland in the hope that they would go to Palestine. So in 1946, illegally, we crossed the Czechoslovakian, Austrian, and German borders and ended up in the American-occupied zone of Germany near Kassel, Germany. Parents stayed in Kassel, Germany in a DP camp. Probably most of you have heard about the displaced persons camps in Germany. And we lived in Germany until 1949. So for about 3 years, a little over 3 years, we lived in Germany. And while parents stayed in a DP camp in Kassel, I and my boyfriend, whom I met in Almaty, Kazakhstan in Russia, we went to Frankfurt am Main and enrolled in the medical school in Frankfurt, which was not destroyed during the war. The only problem was that Emil, my future husband, spoke a few words of German, but I did not speak any German at all. So now, in order to continue my studies, I had to learn German. But now food was plentiful. UNRWA and Joint and other organizations were sending care packages to Germany. So food was already plentiful. Hunger was no longer an issue. And had to learn German pretty quick in order to continue my medical studies, which I started in Almaty just the very early semester. Anyway, in 1949, I was finally able to immigrate to the United States. Emil came a year earlier because his paperwork was completed 1 year earlier. And I came in June of 1949 on the same boat with my parents and with Emil's parents. We came to New York City, and Emil and my aunt met us at the port. And Emil already looked very Americanized. He already spoke a little English. And my problem was now I had to learn English. I'm still learning English, and I'm learning Spanish now also. Anyway, ever since I came to the United States, we kissed the ground. We saw the Statue of Liberty approaching the port in New York City, and life was good. For the first time in our lives, we were finally in control of our own life. Life was not easy. Had to learn language, had to get a job to earn some money, and had to learn enough English to be able to eventually go back to school in the United States. But this blessed country of ours provided lots of opportunity. And since we're in control of our life, Emil and I decided to get married. We got married in the Bronx and immediately left for Iowa City, where he continued his medical studies and I went to graduate school. I got my master's in Iowa City. Two of our daughters were born, both of our daughters were born in Iowa City, and life was pretty good already. Eventually, while Emil was doing his internship in Detroit, Michigan, I was working for Park Davis Pharmaceutical Company, working on the vaccinia virus and influenza virus. So I'm a virologist by training. I never went back to medical school because after finishing almost 3.5 years of medical school in Germany, I got college credit for my medical school and now had to go back to day one. I refused to do that. So went to graduate school and, like I say, eventually got my PhD degree from Wayne State University in Detroit, and spent the rest of my life doing biomedical research and teaching medical students and nursing students. So eventually, we worked at Park Davis Company. We worked at Albert Einstein Medical Center in Philadelphia from 61 until 1971. And then in 1971, we got an invitation to come to Houston. So that's where we ended up in 1971.
Thank you. Hadas? Yeah, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I feel that all the people that we have with us, it's still the same number, 160, so we're good. And you're very interesting for everyone to listen to. And we have a lot of questions from people, so I'm going to unmute you again. I think I'm just going to ask you one question at the time. And the first one talks about life before the war. And Dan was wondering, what was the relation like between Jews and the Polish people before the war? So for you as a girl in school, how was your relations with the non-Jews in Poland?
Well, it just so happened that I had blue eyes and very light blonde hair, and I didn't really look very Jewish. But there was no question that there was anti-Semitism in Poland before the war. In fact, I was going to a Polish public school in Radom, Poland, and before the lectures began, everybody had to stand up, and there was a Polish prayer, and of course the Polish students would cross themselves, and my Jewish friends and I, we would just stand up out of respect, but we wouldn't cross ourselves. So we would get beaten up sometimes. Why didn't you cross yourself? And we had to explain that we just we respect your religion, but we don't cross. We are Jewish. So there was no question that there was anti-Semitism in Poland. But I had many, many Polish, very good friends with whom we performed, like I said, those plays for our families and friends. There was also anti-Semitism in Russia by individual people. I personally did not experience much anti-Semitism, but Emil got beaten up a couple times in Alma-Ata. He was attacked by some Russian hooligans that beat him up because he was Jewish. But the government forbid any anti-Semitic expressions. And if we would have reported those hooligans, they probably would have been put in jail. So things were not too bad. And I personally did not suffer much. I didn't look Jewish. So unless I told them I was Jewish, they wouldn't know. Yeah.
Thank
okay.
So we have another question that is just related to that. And Norit just asked if you could share a little bit about the Jewish community in your hometown, because you shared a little bit about the family and some of your tradition, but how is the community like?
Well, you know, in Russia, there was no religion. Communism was the religion, and Stalin was God. There were no synagogues that I was aware of. There were no official churches or synagogues or anything. And like I say, before the war, we observed high holidays, but we were not regular synagogue goers. I know my parents supported the local synagogue in Radom, but we were not regular goers. And many of my father's clients were not Jewish. He was very well liked by his Christian clients. And sometimes I thought I was getting more Christmas gifts from his Christian clients than I was getting from my parents for Hanukkah. My brother and I were always brought up that it doesn't matter how you worship God, and as long as you are good human beings and don't do any harm to your fellow human brothers and sisters, just be a good human being. It doesn't matter how you worship God, just be good. Just be good. And this is how I raised my daughters. Both of them were married to Jewish men, but again, they're very inclusive, and I just wish the rest of the world would be more inclusive, there would be less anti-Semitism, and that people would just be much more tolerant of each other's religions. Yeah.
Thank you, Anna. I think if you're ready, we have a few more questions that I think people would love to hear a little bit more. So another question is if you could share a little bit about your journey from Stalingrad to Kazakhstan and how exactly you did it and how it went.
Well, that journey between Stalingrad and Almaty took, I think, a couple of weeks. I wish I had kept a diary, but I didn't. So I pretty much rely on my memory. But we were traveling by cattle trains. Each cattle car had a couple of bunks, and we were able to lay down on the bunk. In the middle of the car, there was just a little heating oven to keep us from freezing in Russian winter as we were traveling towards Almaty. And food was very, very scarce. Once a day, the train would stop sometimes in the middle of nowhere, and we were asked to get out of the train to take care of our natural needs. And to this day, I still have visions of many people running back to the train with their pants down because they didn't want to be left in the middle of nowhere if they missed getting back on the train. And once a day, they would also give us a little kipyatok, that's hot water from the engine room, which stank with fuel, but at least there was a little bit of liquid, something hot and something wet, and they gave us a little bit of food. So that journey was very, very, very difficult. But I still consider myself very fortunate compared to what some of my friends survived during the Holocaust, the ones that were fortunate to survive. The abuse that they have endured was probably much, much worse than what I experienced during the war, being in Russia. And just hunger, hunger, hunger. So now my message to people always is there is no life without some problems, without some obstacles. You must never let obstacle knock you down and keep you down. You have to solve it as well as you possibly can. It makes you stronger. It makes you more determined. You just have to go on and try to do the best and achieve your goals. You have to work hard. Nothing comes easy. Sometimes I talk to young people today, and they think life should be without any problems. Yeah.
Anna, we're going to have, I think, two or three more questions, and then we're going to close our conversation. So another very interesting question that we had is when and how did you first learn of concentration camp and all that have happened during the war? Did you know it when you were in Russia and Kazakhstan, or only when you guys came back to Germany and Poland area, you learned what happened?
Well, as I mentioned before, on the Russian radio, we did not learn anything. We only heard how brave the Russian soldiers are, how successful they are pushing the Germans back. So we did not find out about all the atrocities that were committed under the Nazi regime in their occupied territories, particularly in Poland and the concentration camp, until we came back to Poland. That's when the whole reality struck us. That's why we did not want to stay in Poland. We did not want to live in Poland anymore. We wanted to leave Poland as soon as possible. So that's when we found out. And I'm still learning. I spend a lot of time at the Holocaust Museum, Houston, educating young people about the Holocaust, about what was happening during the Holocaust, and the lessons we must learn from the Holocaust to make sure that atrocities like these never, never, never happen again. Yeah.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you. And I think that was a beautiful note and actually another answer for another question. So you got that one right as well. The last question actually is about Houston. What was your first thought when you just came to Houston, and how were you accepted by the community here?
Well, when we came to Houston, 4th of July in 1971, our younger daughter came with us. Our older daughter, Pauline, stayed in Philadelphia to finish her art school. She was going to Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts. And Houston greeted us with fireworks because we arrived after dark already. And the very next morning, our neighbor, whom we never met before, came over with a tray full of cookies and handed us her door key, said, I noticed you moved in last night, but I didn't see your baggage arriving. So please go stay in my place. My husband and I are going to be in the country. Can you imagine? A total stranger. We knew we came to the right place, and there were non-Jewish neighbors. We became very good friends. Their son would cut our lawn, and they were incredibly nice people. And we both got positions on the faculty at the University of Texas Medical School, Houston, that just opened up a year earlier. And I've been spending, even today, I also meet with medical students and did a lot of teaching and biomedical research. Emil did all three. He did biomedical research, teaching, and he also saw patients. But I never saw patients. I just dedicated my life to biomedical research. So life was good. We loved Houston. We loved Texas. We think Texans are the greatest people in the United States.
I feel like you can't really say anything else, right? Other everyone are just going to leave the conversation. So it's a good thing. And I wanted to say again, thank you, thank you, thank you. I think all of us are so appreciative for you giving the time. And even with all the challenging technology issues and the fact that we need to be far away, you were still able to be here with us and share your story. And thank you so much for that. Again, I cannot tell you, there's like a chat box on the side that I'm able to see. And there's so many thank you, and thank you for your messages and your positive and just who you are for us and for this community. And I also just wanted to tell you that Ben Proler is here. In case you haven't known, Ben was one of our hosts for Zikaron Basalon in the past, I think, 3 years. And Anna always came to Ben's house, so he still wanted to be with us today, even though he's not able to physically host Anna. And I just can only hope that next year Zikaron Basalon is actually going to happen in living rooms, even though I have to say this was a great opportunity to get the community together and to have, 160 people listed, but I see your faces and I see so many people, and it's just been a really wonderful opportunity. So I just want to thank Anna again, and thanks the Jewish Federation for taking and creating this program for our community. If you want to hear about other programs and other events that we're having for Yom HaTzma'ut, you're more than welcome to go to the Jewish Federation website. And Anna, if you have some final thoughts that you want to share with us, you are more than welcome. Well,
I just want to say that the Jewish Federation is doing an incredible job. I do support it with whatever I can. I give a lot of talks, and keep up all the wonderful work. The Jewish Federation and you, you are all doing a great, great job educating the public. So keep up the wonderful work. Stay well. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Anna, and thank you, everyone, for joining us today. And good night, everyone.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you.
Good night. It was wonderful. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
It was terrific.
Thank you.
Right.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Laila Tov.
Laila Tov.
Laila Tov.